We're doing Shoftim and we're beginning the story of Shimshon. Our sages tell us that, in essence, our last judge was really Shimshon, Samson. It's unclear whether in the beginning of the book of Samuel, in the beginning of the book of Shmuel, Eli and Shmuel had the din of a judge. The period of Shimshon is a period when we were under Philistine rule. We're on page, on this version, page 57. The common theme in the book of Shoftim is that we keep going off track and then God sends us a judge that brings us back on track. And the story of Shimshon really begins with his parents, something which we don't find by any other judge. That the Navi, the Bible tells us the history of the judge. It's only by Shimshon that suddenly we have his history. And the Torah the Navi tells us that there was a man from the tribe of Dan, which is a problematic tribe. The tribe of Dan had idol worship in their midst throughout the period of the judges. So the source of Shimshon, the source of Samson, is a problematic territory. The tribe of Dan was a tribe that the majority of the tribe was serving idols. They had an idol at the Chatzbani, at the source of the Jordan, up north. We don't have a map here, but we're told that they put the... okay. So up... what am I looking at here? At the source of the Jordan, up here. So where the Jordan really begins. So there's a place called the Chatzbani. That's what it's called today. And there, up there, they put an idol to bless all the waters of the Jordan. So the tribe of Dan, throughout the period of Shoftim, are idol worshippers, and Shimshon, Samson, comes from the tribe of Dan. And we begin the story with his father, who, among our sages, there are two opinions, whether his father was a righteous person, or his father was a common folk, an Amoritz person who didn't know anything, wasn't learned at all. Two opinions among our sages. And he and his wife were old, and they didn't have children. And that's how the story begins. An angel appears to the wife, notice the wife, not the husband, and tells her, you know, you're a barren woman, you can't have children, but now you will become pregnant and have a child. And I want you to be careful not to drink wine, don't eat anything that's defiled, because you should know that at this moment you became pregnant. From this moment onward, kihinachara, this moment you just became pregnant, and you'll have a child. You're not allowed to shave his head. You're not allowed to give him a haircut. He will be a nazir. The Torah tells us there a person can take a vow to separate himself from worldly things. One of the things he has to do is grow his hair, and ultimately he shaves all that hair that he grows. This child, Shimshon, Samson, is going to grow his hair for life. And he is going to be separate for God from the womb, and he will begin saving the Jewish people from the Philistines. Notice, he doesn't conclude, nor is his job to conclude. His job is to start the fight. Sometimes the mere fact that you're starting to protect, that's already a fulfillment of one's task. And the angel, before Shimshon is born, tells her he will begin saving the Jews from the Philistine. This saving process is going to go through the lifetime of Shimshon, through the lifetime of Shmuel, through the lifetime of King Saul. Only when David HaMelech comes to the scene, King David is the only one that finally removes the Philistine as a looming threat from the Jewish people. But from Shimshon, from Samson, through David, we are going to have difficulties with the Philistines. So the woman comes home and tells her husband, a man of God came to me. Now we have a discussion among our sages, when an angel appears, does the individual know it is an angel or not? Maimonides is of the opinion that angels never take on corporeal form. Angels are spiritual beings, and being spiritual beings, that means you don't see them with your naked eye. They never take on physical form. So how do you see them? Just like you see prophets, prophecy. It's not something that you see physically, but rather it's something that the neshama witnesses. One's soul has a vision and sees something, but it's not something that you see with your naked eye. Now here, she comes and tells him, the man of God came to me. It certainly is simpler to learn this whole parasha going with Nachmanides' opinion, the Ramban's opinion, that angels do sometimes show up like humans. And the whole story, when Avram has the Malachim coming to him, the three angels show up by Avram, so there, that's where the machlokas begins. Nachmanides says, yeah, Abraham thought three Arabs were roaming the desert, and he offered them food and drink and took care of them. And Maimonides says, no, it was all a vision of prophecy. The whole story happened within prophecy. So she tells him, the man of God came to me. He looked like an angel. He was awesome. I didn't ask him where he was from. I don't know which city this prophet was from. He didn't tell me his name. And he told me that I'm pregnant, and that from now on I can't drink wine, I can't eat anything defiled, and the child is going to be a Nazir from the womb. So Manoach prays, and he says, please God, send that man again, and he'll teach us what to do with the child. He doesn't trust his wife. Now it's interesting, we have things pointing in both directions. On the one hand, the angel is going to appear a second time to the wife. Both times he appears to the wife. On the other hand, Manoach's prayers were answered. On the one hand, the only one who's identified by the Bible is Manoach. His wife is always called his wife. We have on tradition that her name was Tzlalfonis. That's a tradition we have, that was her name. But it doesn't say it anywhere. It's on tradition. The Talmud tells us that was her name. So she's always known as his wife, as though she's his wife. She doesn't have her own name in the Bible. So the question is, who is bigger? From the fact that the angel keeps appearing to her and not to him, it certainly seems like she was the big one. She was a great woman who an angel appears and tells her this. On the other hand, his name is identified and his prayer is answered. But if his prayer was answered, why didn't the angel appear to him? It seems a little humorous what's going on here. He prays that the angel show up again and tell us what's going on. The angel shows up again, and again it's to the wife, as though there's miscommunication here. What's going on? So that's a question we'll leave as a question, but something to think about. So the verse identifies it that God listens to Manoach, and the angel appears a second time to the woman, and again she's out in the field, and Manoach, her husband, is not with her. So what does she do? She says, wait, hold it. She runs and she calls Manoach. And she says, hey, he's shown up, that man has shown up again. So Manoach and goes after his wife a second time. And here our sages say, if Manoach was a learned person, then it means he went after her advice. If Manoach was not learned, it just means that he was following her along. She goes and he's following. Our sages say a modest person doesn't walk following his wife. Because if a person is walking behind a woman, then the nature is that he's going to take a good look, and that's not the way a modest person behaves. So if Manoach was really a learned person, then he shouldn't have been walking behind his wife, even his own wife. A person is supposed to be intimate in places that are intimate. A person is supposed to be modest when he's outside the house. So a modest person doesn't go walking directly behind a woman. And the pasuk clearly says he walked behind his wife. So if he was learned, it means he followed her advice. If he was not learned, that means even this he didn't know, which is no surprise. We know even in the time of the Talmud, people who weren't learned didn't even know how to read. They didn't even know how to say Shema Yisrael. There was a huge gap in among the Jewish people. You had people who were very learned, much greater than anyone we have today, and then you had people who knew nothing, much less than almost anyone we have today, completely illiterate. We find this throughout our history. So he comes to the man and he asks him, are you the man who spoke to the woman? Which is interesting. Why does he call her the woman? He doesn't even call her my wife. So the man says, yes, it's I. So Manoach says, okay, tell me, what should we do with the child? And he tells him, do as I told the woman. Basically, what do you need to hear it all over again for? I told her everything. Anything that comes from a grape, he shouldn't eat. He shouldn't drink wine or anything defiled. Whatever I told her. So Manoach says, let's bring a sacrifice with you. And the angel says, I'm not going to eat your bread. You want to bring a sacrifice, bring it to God. And Manoach, the verse explicitly says, did not know it was an angel. Which leads us to question, how does this work according to Maimonides? According to Maimonides, every vision is something that's not natural. It's not a physical vision. How could he have a vision of prophecy and not know it's a vision? And it's a stronger question on the Rambam, because Maimonides says that a vision must have tremendous clarity. Because if a godly vision doesn't have tremendous clarity, then the prophet has to ask himself, maybe I dreamed it, maybe it wasn't true. Maybe I went insane for those minutes. When Abraham is told by God, take your son, Isaac isn't told that. Why does Isaac listen to him? Isaac, according to our tradition, was 37 years old. Isaac could have taken on his father. What is Isaac going with his father for? Our tradition is that Abraham was 100% certain it was a prophecy. And Yitzchak was 100% certain it was prophecy. Because if there was any room for doubt, then Abraham was a murderer. How are you taking your son to slaughter him? So you think God told you to do it? Who said you're right? Maybe God didn't say so? So when Avram says, after the whole procession of the Akedah, of the binding, Avram says, from here is testimonial that God appears to mankind. Maimonides explains, what's the testimonial? Because everyone knows that I've been preaching for the last 100 years that stop sacrificing your children to the idols. And here God tells me to do it, and I'm prepared to do it myself. And then God tells me, no, I didn't mean to sacrifice, don't sacrifice him. You've bound him, you showed that you're willing to do it, now take him down and bring the animal. Why was Avram willing? Why was Yitzhak willing? Explains Maimonides. This is testimonial to the fact that a vision of prophecy is 100% clear. The prophet can't have any doubt. If there was any room for doubt, then there would be nothing pious about what Avram and Yitzchak did. Now we come to our parsha. What's happening here? It says Manoach is seeing an angel, and Manoach doesn't know that he's seeing an angel. So going in line with Maimonides' reasoning, that Maimonides says that angels only appear in visions of prophecy, we have to question, wait a second, how could it be that Manoach is unaware that he's seeing a vision of prophecy? Maimonides says, angels only appear in prophecy. They don't take on corporeal form. You don't see an angel with your physical eye. You see it with your soul. You don't see it with your eye. So here Manoach is having a vision of prophecy, and yet it says clearly he didn't know it was an angel. So what we might say, according to Maimonides, is that after the vision of prophecy, it's 100% clear that he saw a prophecy. But it could be that at the moment that he's witnessing the prophecy, at that very moment when he's not with it, he's unconscious, he feels like it's real, he feels like it's happening right now. It could be that what Maimonides says, that a prophet must be 100% clear that what he saw is prophecy and what the prophecy was, maybe that's after the prophecy, but maybe during the prophecy he feels like it's happening right now. Maybe. Or maybe there's another answer. So he asked the angel, tell me, what's your name? And the angel says, what do you need my name for? It's covered. Every time I get a different mission, I get a different name. So Manoach brings a sacrifice, and the angel disappears with a flame of fire. And Manoach and his wife witness this, and they fall on their faces. And Manoach turns to his wife, and he says, you know, we're going to die. We just saw an angel. So his wife says, if God wanted to kill us, he wouldn't have accepted our sacrifice. And he wouldn't have told us we're about to have a kid. Again, who seems to be running the show? The wife. He doesn't seem to know. He says, we're going to die. And she says, no, we're not going to die. She gives birth. They name the child Shimshon. Who knows who was called Shemesh? Shemesh means sun. Yaakov Avinu was called Shemesh. Yaakov's nickname was Shemesh. So he's called Shimshon. And he is blessed. Now our tradition is that Shimshon was crippled in both his legs. He was a huge person. He was very, he had broad shoulders and he was very strong, but he was crippled in both his legs. So he wobbled, he managed, but he was crippled. And he started having prophecy. And he goes down to the city of Timnas and he sees a Philistine girl, and he goes back to his father and his mother and he says, I saw a young lady, I want you to take her for me as a wife. And what do his parents tell him? What are you going to take a Philistine girl for? Stay within the Jewish people. What are you marrying out? And here we begin seeing a description which will last throughout the story of Shimshon. The Philistines are referred to as the Arelim, the ones that are not circumcised. Now, we have on tradition, and today science has bared it out, that when a person circumcises, so he removes a piece of skin which is very sensitive. And that means that he is going to have less desire and less pleasure. Now, that's part of the idea of a circumcision. Chazal say that it helps a person control himself. When we speak about the Philistines, one of the terms we use to describe the Philistines throughout the story is the uncircumcised ones. And we will see that throughout the story, there are a few things we see that seem to be traits of the Philistines. They're always joking. They have houses of jest. They're people that don't seem to be able to unify because they're always joking. Every other nationality throughout the Tanakh has a king. The Philistines, they don't have a king. They have five governors. But they can't unify and appoint one king. And the question is why? And the question is also, how much were we affected by this? If we were under their rule, was it like the time of the Greeks, that you had many Jews that were adopting the Greek style of life? Where were the Jewish people at this period? So we'll have to see what the Tanakh tells us as we go along. Now, really, God had wanted him to intermarry with the Philistines. The prophet clearly says it was part of the godly plan that he should become connected with the Philistines, and as such, he'll have claims against them, as we will see that's what's going to happen. Question number one. Samson never gathers the army. Samson never takes the position of a leader like any leader that preceded him. Throughout Samson's life, he's a one-man show. He's going to fight every war on his own. Why? Where were the rest of the Jewish people? Who was he protecting and where were they? Why is he fighting alone? It reaches a point where they tell him, you're endangering our lives. So he has to prove that he's doing this all on his own. They're not joining him in the fights. Why? Why does Shimshon need claims? Seems like this is the godly plan. He's supposed to have his own personal claims with the Philistines so then he could fight them. Why? So we can say that this was the prelude to the kingship in the Jewish people. Meaning the Jewish people are going to see that it just doesn't work. He's not going to be successful. He's successful in as much as instilling fear in them. But he's not successful. We're still under Philistine rule when Samson dies. On the one hand, he succeeds at what he did. On the other hand, bottom line, when he dies, we're still under Philistine rule. Until King David, we're still going to be under Philistine rule. But on the other hand, it seems like that's what God wants him to do. Because God tells him, go marry into them, and then you'll start having politics with them, and then you'll have your own vendetta to take out against them. So as we read the story, we have to ask ourselves, what was the godly plan, and how did Shimshon fulfill it? For some reason, his parents go along with it. And he doesn't tell them it's a godly plan. Our sages say that she agreed to convert. But our sages say she agreed to convert and she wasn't really wholehearted about it. So that's why we're going to see that a few days after the wedding, she's already with a Philistine guy. She did it because she wanted to marry him. And the question is, why did she agree? Think about it. What did Shimshon look like? You're talking about a guy who was abnormal. Our sages say his shoulders were broad, maybe broader than this room. And his feet were crippled. So he's wobbling. He's growing his beard. He's never taken a haircut and he's never taken a shave. So think what he looked like. Some motorcycle rider. He's got hair down to here. Think about it. His hair is wrapped around his head. How well could he have showered? He's not allowed to pull out any hairs. Who would want to marry a guy like this? And she agrees. And it doesn't even say that they conversed. It says he went down to talk to her and they agreed. So the question is why? What was wrong with her? Well, if there's something wrong with her, so maybe in those days. But you see, she was able to get a guy. A few weeks after the marriage, she's with a Philistine guy. So we have to ask ourselves, why'd she agree? Yeah?
Maybe she was sure he's not going to be an alcoholic.
How could she be sure he's not going to be an alcoholic? You see that no one knew this secret. Till the very end, no one knew he wasn't drinking alcohol. And anyways, the Philistines were on top. We were on bottom. Why would a Philistine girl want to marry a Jewish guy? They were running the show at the time. We were under their rule. So this whole story on the surface seems like, oh, a very nice story. Went and married her. But when you think about it for a second, you have to ask yourselves, how does all this work? Why would she want to? And why would her parents agree? And they make him this whole big party. So one of the things we see is that when Shimshon was ultimately captured by the Philistines, so it says they used him to run the mill, to grind. And our tradition is that the Philistines were in such awe of his power that each Philistine said, I want to have a kid like that. So they'd all bring their wives and tell them, you sleep with him tonight because I want to have a kid like that. I want to have such a powerful warrior. And our tradition has it that that's what the Philistines had him doing. All the time that he was there in prison, They used him as a, they wanted to have warriors like him. So maybe he was so impressive. She wanted a guy, a Hulk. I mean, that's what she got. Maybe. But this is something that needs work. I mean, what's going on here? And we see the marriage didn't last. They didn't get along. We'll see in a second. Shimshon's on his way down with his parents to meet the girl, and they're going to cross through a grape vineyard. Now, have any of you ever been to a vineyard? The most natural thing when you're in a vineyard is to pick a grape and eat it. If you don't think twice, you see luscious grapes growing, the first thing you want to do is grab a grape and eat it. And that's what people ordinarily do. You walk through a vineyard that's not owned by anyone. So before you think about it, you're going to pick a grape. So Shimshon says, you know, I'm not allowed to eat grapes. Maybe I'll forget myself for a second. Mom, Dad, you go through the vineyard, I'm going to go around. And from here we derive halachic concept. When there are things that are prohibited, don't walk right near them and say, oh, I won't eat it. Lech lech amri nezira. We tell the nazir, you go the longer route, schol schol, go around, lekal malotikav. Don't go near the vineyard. If you walk through the vineyard, learn from Samson. He knew, he had every reminder, his whole life he's never had grapes. And yet he said, you know, maybe when I'm there, I'll pick a grape and I'll eat it. So Shimshon goes around the vineyard, and from here we derive that halachic concept. When he's going around the vineyard, a young lion attacks. And it says that he had the Spirit of God on him at that moment, and he tore him in two. He had no weapon. When he reached his parents, he didn't tell them the story. This is one of the traits we're going to see throughout the prophets. We see it by Shaul, by King Saul as well. They don't tell. They're not proud people. We live in a world where, how do you get elected? By telling everyone how great you are. Throughout the Tanakh, we're going to see that our great people never tell how great they are. David, King David, is once watching the sheep. This is a good story. I tell my kids it's a bedtime story. And they want a story about a lion. It says, the Navi, he was watching the sheep once and a lion attacked. And he destroyed the lion single-handedly. A bear grabbed one of his sheep and he smacked the bear and took the sheep away. And when it came time to stand up to Goliath, he said to King Saul, he said, look, I must have been crazy that moment, right? Who goes up against the lion? Who goes up against the bear? But I had a godly spirit on me at that moment, and I did something unnatural. I don't know why I did it. And I felt like God was telling me, you should know that in the future, I'm going to be with you. You could stand up to things that seem insurmountable. So David HaMelech says, now when you tell the kids, obviously you embellish the story. He was with the sheep, and suddenly there was a rustle in the bushes, and a lion, etc., right? I mean, you guys got to have bedtime stories. But the Navi just says it in two words, that he stood up to a bear and he stood up to a lion and he took away the sheep and he rescued his sheep. He doesn't tell anyone about it until the time comes to face Goliath. Then he tells King Saul, you should know, it once happened to me and I know that God was giving me a message. You could stand up to difficult tasks. Same thing King Saul, when he's anointed as king, when he's told by the prophet that he's going to be the first king of Israel, doesn't tell his uncle. His uncle asks him, what did the prophet tell you? He tells him, oh, he told me where our lost animals are. Doesn't tell him the rest of the story. That's the hallmark of a leader. Our Moshe Rabbeinu, the same thing. The hallmark of a leader is he's not proud. He's modest. Because his job as a leader is to care for the people. His job isn't just to tell them what to do. Quite the contrary. Like Yosef said in our parsha, I was sent here to serve all of you. A leader is a public servant. So the first trait that a leader needs is modesty, and that's what we see here in Shimshon. He takes on a lion single-handedly, comes back to his parents. You think the first people he's going to tell, yeah, that's not being proud, I'm just telling my parents. No, Shimshon doesn't say a word. So no one knows about the story. He's just defeated a lion single-handedly, and the Navi says he didn't say anything. He didn't tell his father, he didn't tell his mother. It just continued down the path like nothing happened.